This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 102.7 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, I watched the great hack over the weekend, and it got me thinking about the future of tech giants like Google and Facebook, who rely so heavily on our personal data that we willingly just give away for free for their marketing algorithms. Now, yesterday, Martin Sanner of the CSIR told me that the seemingly all-powerful tech companies most likely won't 10 in terms of market cap in the next 10 years, which, apart from Microsoft's stickiness in these past decades' top 10 rankings, would certainly be borne out by history as new giants tend to emerge to take the crown through the decades. Well, Broderick Williams of Flux Trends is in studio to talk about data and how brands can connect with humans in this data-driven world. Broderick, so good to see you again.
Great, thank you so much for inviting me.
Now, the one thing that we're constantly sold by those in tech is this utopia of data. In God we trust, everyone else bring data. I'm sure you've heard that line at every single tech conference you've attended. But what comes with it is a great degree of, shall we call it, concern around the willingness. We are increasingly willing to give away our data, and that willingness surely has to stop at some point. For how much longer can you foresee consumers just giving away their data to the likes of Facebook and Google?
Well, I would say that there's already a pushback that's starting to happen, particularly in more educated and well-off communities. Of course, in Africa, it's a bit different, because if you've got a choice between give your data to get actual data for free, it makes quite good sense. But it's all about trade-offs, because we have to understand that data is a powerful commodity these days, and he who owns your data can do a whole lot with that data, both for your benefits or not necessarily so, depending on who owns that.
And back to the great hack and the theme there being just how one can weaponize that kind of data in terms of weaponizing communications to swing elections, to profile people. And really, companies are just using it to sell you targeted advertising. But in an increasingly inauthentic world of bots and big data and fake news, surely brands risk losing their connection. Don't human beings want this human connection anymore?
They absolutely do, and that's exactly the risk, because if you build your business on big data only, you're really playing a zero cost sum lowest common denominator game. It's a game that only the biggest can win, and as you were saying earlier, that's basically Amazon for now, for example. They win, and no one can compete with them on their turf until they become too big and fail because some entirely new business model comes onto the scene. But if you play that big data game, you're really extracting your brand from the business, and brands were created back in the day to give that differentiation. Because if you're playing a zero cost, lowest cost denominator game, you've got no margin left, right? Because someone can always come and offer something cheaper and more efficient and faster and more convenient. You have to have something more than that. And that's where brands come in, and brands are more about actually creating a value or a connection with people. And that's really the only asset a company has in a completely data-driven world.
It's something that Jeremy Sampson likes to remind me about every week when we talk about intangible value that sits on company balance sheets. And he, you know, he's Mr. Branding in South Africa. He advises so many companies who struggle with that intangible brand value and how to quantify it. But equally, there's a threat for the big brands today, and we see it in the Nielsen surveys. Consumers perhaps not as loyal as they were to those heritage big brands. Are the days of big brands numbered?
Well, I'd say yes and no. It's definitely numbered for some brands, but I think that there's still definitely a place for brands. I think the risk of not building any sort of intangible value is much higher, because you can be sucked up by the data that ate the world, as they say. You know, those very big companies that just steamroll over all the smaller businesses. That's not to say easy strategy to play, and that's not to say that it can make you very rich very quickly, but it might be the only way for mom and pop shops and smaller businesses to actually compete in the data-driven world we have today.
So how do they do that? Just infuse more authenticity, more humanness into their interactions?
Well, there's many things that brands are doing. Some of the strategies are more misguided than others, so one of the ones that everyone seems to be jumping on is the brand wagon, as I call it, where people start getting into morality marketing and trying to attach their brands with social causes. So that can get you a lot of press. Like, of course, we all know what happened with Nike and Custer Semenya and how they picked those slightly controversial stars and backed their horses and got a lot of kudos. But it's a very dangerous game, because if you call that zeitgeist even slightly wrong, consumers are absolutely unforgiving. So if you're going to play the morality branding game, you better be very certain about what that game is you're playing and what your consumers really care about.
You are, as you say, riding the zeitgeist of the time, which it seems to be in the age of 240 characters, and a president who changes his mood as often as he changes his underwear can really flip in an instant. Which are the brands, if you survey the scene, that are getting that right?
That are getting the morality sort of all social justice marketing right? I'd say brands like Patagonia are probably good ones to go with, because their social responsibility was built into the DNA of the brand to start with. It wasn't something that was slapped on top like a band-aid thereafter. So brands that sort of dabble in social justice and then get cold feet can get very badly burnt. So like L'Oreal did that. They hired some ambassadors who then ended up offending different contingents of their brand group, and they ended up discarding those influencers and really just messing it up even further.
If you're going to go woke, go full woke.
I think it
is the message.
And really, it can't just be a marketing strategy. Woke washing is hollow marketing. But if you are building a socially conscious business from the ground up, then you might not, be able to compete with the biggest league. You might not be as soulless as you need to be to compete with Amazon, but you can absolutely build your tribe and build a very nice business for yourself.
I was chatting to the head of Nielsen South Africa last week about their consumer insights survey, and that's certainly a big trend that they're picking up on. The fact that consumers are a lot more savvy and they are associating themselves with brands who don't just slap this on as an afterthought marketing attempt or a gimmick. They actually live and breathe and walk this. Paul Pullman of Unilever is another one, and that really is driven from the top. What are the other digital marketing trends that you're seeing?
Well, we're definitely seeing a trend away from your sort of classic Facebook advertising or pay-per-click advertising on Google and towards more nuanced forms of big data connection with people. So on the one side, you've got your whole influencer culture that's going on, and influencers are sort of drilling down to your micro-influencers that might have fewer followers but have a more authentic human connection with them.
I want to stop you on that for a second. The ethics of influencers.
That's a whole other topic.
I mean,
definitely one to look at.
It's something that is almost advertorial. You need to slap it right up front in bright, bold, red font. The fact that you're being paid to tweet or endorse a product on Instagram, yet we don't see that.
Well, you do see that in other parts of the world where it's actually law. You have to disclose that you have been paid or sponsored. So you will see on like American or European influencers' accounts, they'll say sponsored or #ad. They actually have to do that. It is law. I don't know where the South African ASA stands on that, but it's definitely something they should be looking at, because that authenticity spins both ways. It's not just the brand that needs to be authentic, so do the people that are playing in that ecosystem. But as I've said, brands are switching away from the ones with mega followers that are wanting, millions of dollars for a post, as ridiculous as that is, and working with smaller influencers that can demonstrate a real sort of group dynamic going through there. So that's definitely the one trend. Brands are actually spending more money on that these days, which is interesting to me. And the other trend is actually away from pay-per-click advertising and towards what I call pay-per-person advertising. It's kind of a new trend that's just starting to emerge, and this is when we start to actually shuffle humans around like human chess pieces in the real world, as opposed to just shuffling our search history from our desktops from one website to another.
So give me an example of that.
Okay, so a great example of that would be the whole phenomenon of Pokemon Go. So you whip out your cell phone and you're running around trying to catch your little monsters. But those monsters have been strategically placed. They are guiding those consumers to certain locations.
Ah.
And businesses like restaurants or retailers could actually pay Google, who owns Pokemon, by the way, to place Pokemons or very desirable Pokemons inside their stores or their restaurants, thereby literally drawing foot traffic to your store. So it's this gamification of real life. And that's really the next step. So we already know how to be led around by the nose through the web. No, they can lead you around by the nose through the real world.
For the real world. Well, speaking of being led around by the nose through the web, you've written about the spatial web in the past, and it certainly resonated with me because I know someone who loves his Fortnite. But it isn't the old console-type gaming experience that you or I may have grown up with. Fortnite is in the cloud. You can put your headphones on, and the conversations are loud, it's social, it's an entirely different environment, and a possibility here for advertisers to connect with an audience that way.
Absolutely, and these virtual economies now have real-world implications. I mean, like, we've interviewed many teenagers in South Africa who spend their pocket money on clothing for their avatars rather than for their physical bodies. But it's more than that. It's not just gaming. It's not just an escapism or a hobby. It's actually becoming a social network in and of itself. So whereas millennials, like old people like myself, would have socialized on your Facebook or your Instagram or your Twitter, younger generations are actually interacting with each other through the spatial web, through virtual reality or through online gaming systems. So you'd actually log on to a game to connect with your friends, to have conversations and to hang out. So you can have a full-on social life right from your bedroom, a lot more meaningful than your text-based conversation that us poor millennials had to deal with when we were teenagers.
Now, Bronwyn, for brands, there's a lot that changes almost on a week-by-week, month-by-month basis in this world. What's the key to succeeding?
I think the key to succeeding is to be authentically yourself all the way through. So you can't be slapping on, as I said, morality marketing or brand wagoning campaigns. You have to actually live what you're saying you're going to do. And that really comes down to trust. So you have to build trust with consumers once again. Consumers are highly jaded. We know that our data is being exploited. We know that we are being, you know, exploited for every cent that we can afford. The algorithms out there know what we can afford, they know what we want, they can anticipate our needs. But that, of course, means that we distrust the companies that have that power over us. And that's going to become an even bigger issue as we go forward, as people start to watch things like The Great Hack and start to understand just how much they are giving away by interacting with companies. So that's a huge challenge to overcome, but it absolutely can be done by focusing on the human element and by focusing on building trust once again. And of course, that's a much more longer term strategy than a nice sort of big data slash and burn, let's take what we can today because our company's not going to be here in 10 years time kind of strategy. But if you want to build something that's meaningful, that will last, you really, really have to work on that human trust-based connection.
Bronwyn Williams, our trend translator from Flux Trends here on Classic Business.